Let's take your Bible, if you will, for a few minutes tonight, and let's turn over to Jonah. As I mentioned to you on Sunday morning that we would be back over in here, well, lo and behold, here we are. Jonah chapter 2 is one of the more famous and powerful places where prayer is made here in the scriptures. Let me ask a question before I get over there and read that. Even I want to make a point with this, so let's not try to go to seed on it. But I'm going to ask the question: could Jesus have sinned? Could Jesus have sinned? Tell me what you think. He could not have sinned. Okay. I didn't say, was there any sin in him, but could he have sinned?
Well, if he, no, I still don't think he would. Because he's God.
Okay. So what you're telling me is that when the Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 4 and when the Bible tells us in Hebrews chapter 4 that he was tempted like as we are without sin, that he was tempted to do things, then he was not really tempted?
He was tempted.
Oh, he was. So if there was if he was tempted, you're telling me that he could have sinned? If it was a temptation, could he or could he not have sinned? Not necessarily a trick question. But it is one to get to evoke an emotion, to get us to think about what I just said, and to see where that leads us. Now, I could stand up here and stoke that for a while, and I could play the advocate for the opposite side many times over. Whichever side of that I wanted to poke, I can poke, and get someone to agree with me, and then all of a sudden your mind goes in 1,000 different directions of, well, maybe he could if you thought he couldn't. And maybe he couldn't if you thought he could with that. And I can keep on with it with Bible ping pong with you until maybe I could confuse you about the issue. But I want to go back to the question to start with. And the question is, could? And therein lies the problem with the question. The question then is a hypothetical. Okay? It makes no difference what each of us thinks about whether he could or couldn't. The fact is, he did not. He did not engage in any sin. He always did the will of his Father. And therein is the impeccability of Christ. He is impeccable. Okay? So, because he always did the will of the Father. And so, all of these, so what I'm saying is the hypothetical really doesn't serve us any good. Okay, the disputation doesn't do us any good. The argument doesn't do us good with that, because we could really get at odds at each other over hypothetical things that don't really mean a lot to us with this. We want to major on the things that the Bible does tell us, and there's a lot of fringe out there and a lot of things on the edge that we don't need to get into, because if we get over into that and use our opinions and our thoughts and our thinks and all of that sort of thing, then we can create problems between us. So the exercise that I started us into is kind of a moot point. He never sinned, and that's the end of the story. So we move on from there. Christians are good at arguing over things that don't matter all that much. And that is a truth. We're really good at arguing about things that don't really amount to a whole lot in the whole scheme of things. And sometimes get very, very bent out of shape about things that don't really matter. Tonight we're going to look at Jonah's prayer. And this is a prayer that gives us a setting. It's in the belly of a fish. And in this prayer, there are some important issues and there are some unimportant issues. And I want to point out some of that tonight important and unimportant. Let me read through, give the story, and then give you a few points of things to think about. I want you to think about this prayer in the context of you praying. We know what happened leading up to this time. We have a turning point that's in this prayer, and then we know what happens after, okay? But the turning point is this prayer. From some bad things that were happening, this occurred, and then some good things happened, even though there was a bad attitude with the individual that was still involved. Beginning in verse 1, "Then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly, and said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heardest my voice. For thou hadst cast me into the deep, in the midst of the seas, and the floods compassed me about. All thy billows and thy waves passed over me. Then I said, I'm cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward thy holy temple. The waters compassed me about, even to the soul. The depth closed me round about, and weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet hast thou brought up my life from corruption, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy. But I'll sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. I'll pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land." What you have in this prayer is a prayer of repentance. Jonah has recognized that all of this has come about because of his inactivity, his inaction, his loss of fellowship with the Lord. And in that loss of fellowship, he knew as he was running away that God was not going to allow him to run forever. That God was not going to allow him to have his head and run in that particular way because he was his. He's God's. And that's the way God is with us. He's not going to allow us to run continually. He's not going to allow us to run away but so far. He's going to correct. He's going to bring back. He's going to do those types of things. And Jonah knew it. He knew it. He knew it when he was in the storm. He knew it when he was tossed in the sea. He knew it before when he just run plumb off. He knew he was going the wrong direction, and he knew that a correction was coming. And you and I both know the same thing today, don't we? We know when we're not in fellowship, in relationship with God the way that we ought to be, and we know it's a matter of time that he's going to bring us into a place where he corners us, and then we'll have that slobbering cry fest to be able to come back to the place that we can have relationship with him. A lot of important things happen in here and some unimportant things as well. He says, he cried in his affliction unto the Lord, and the Lord heard me. One of the things that is unimportant in this is who you are. Jonah was a disobedient prophet, and the Lord heard him. Okay? He was one that was not obeying. He's running. He's off out in the middle of nothing, and the Lord heard him. It wasn't because of who he is. All right? It's because of who the Lord is that he heard him. And so it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what's going on around you. It's that relationship that's important, but the Lord wants to hear from you. And so you don't have to have credentials of some kind to get to him. You just have to have a relationship. And that relationship can be rocky at times, and you still can have access to God. It doesn't depend on you being a super saint or any of that sort of thing. And the prophet Jonah shows us exactly that. He says, he heard me out of the belly of hell when I cried, and he heard my voice. The belly of hell is literally translated, literal translation is from the grave. I cried from the grave, and he heard me. In this particular passage, there will be some that will disagree with me, but if you want to be right, you better go my way. Jonah died in the belly of that fish, And there is so much language in here that tells us exactly that. He says that he cried from the grave. Go down into the 7th verse, and he says, when my soul fainted within me, I remember the Lord, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. When my soul fainted within me. That's another euphemism for death. Verse 6, He says, I went down to the bottoms of the mountains, the earth with her bars was about me forever. He's talking about being imprisoned in the earth. That's talking about death. Remember the song that we sing about, what is it? Up from the grave. Up from the grave, he arose. And boy, how does that verse go? He tore the bars away. And that's what that's talking about, the bars of death that held this individual. And he tore the bars away from that and walked out, kind of a resurrection picture. It says that he, yet you have brought me up, you have brought up my life from corruption, he says. From corruption. Corruption is death. You remember one of the miracles of Jesus, one of the miracles of Jesus' resurrection over in Acts chapter 2, down towards the end of the chapter in there. Actually, the last few verses of the chapter, 5-6 verses, tell the story there about him being raised from the dead. And it says that he did not corrupt, that there was no corruption in him. When Jesus died, he did not; his body did not corrupt. That was one of the miracles of his death, burial, and resurrection right there, that there was no corruption involved in his death, like a normal man is involved. And here, it shows us that Jonah was corrupted. There was corruption that was taking place. He was decaying at that point. And so here we have this situation. You say, well, boy, that's a big long prayer for a dead man in there. Was it, did he pray before he died? Did he pray after he died and when he woke up or whatever else? And I can give you a simple illustration for that. There was a fellow, a preacher, gave testimony once upon a day about his salvation and call to the ministry. As a young lad, his daddy had made him go to church during a revival, made him sit on the front row. He went the first night, sat on the front row, and he said that in his heart he knew that he needed to go forward to be saved, and at the same time knew that God was calling him to preach. He went home that night. Daddy made him come back the next day of the revival. Back in those days, there were 7 and 14 day revivals. Had him up on the front row again the second night, went through the same thing, fought with himself, this and that and the other. And that night he went home, packed his bag, put him an extra set of jammies and another shirt and a knapsack, and headed out. Went to work in a sawmill in a town down the way. And in the process of working in that sawmill, his job was to roll logs over onto the conveyor to go down through the saw. And he used a pike to do that, and he'd done that all day, and they run out of new lumber, timber to go through there. So the foreman told him to go get a bunch of the stuff that they had laying to the side, the junk stuff, and roll that on and cut that up. And so this particular tree he rolled over there had already been cut one time. It cut halfway down. They had scored it and cut it down through there, but for some reason it stopped. So he rolled that one up on there, and using that pike, as he flipped it over and he reached down to steady it, his pointer finger got into that crack where it had been cut, and it pinched and grabbed his finger. And he said that it drug him down through there, down towards that saw, and he couldn't get loose because it pinched it in there. He couldn't get it out. And so he said, I had about 30 seconds or so before all of that was going to come to a head down there at that saw. And he said, during that time, I prayed for salvation. I surrendered to the ministry. He said, I prayed around the world. He said, I prayed for everything under the sun. I can't remember half of what I prayed for. And then that saw hit my finger. He said, I rolled to the side, cut his index finger off, rolled to the side. And he said, and that's how I come to be a preacher, right there. He said, I've prayed a lot of times since that day. He said, but I ain't never prayed as much as I prayed in them 30 seconds. From the time my finger got caught to the time it hit that saw down there on the other end. And I believe that's exactly what we have with old Jonah right here. I think the moment he went into that fish, he knew why he was in that fish. And he began to pray. He began to talk to God about the things that were important at that moment. And the Lord heard that prayer. But he still had to go through 3 days of death and corruption and all of those things until the Lord resurrected him at the far end of that process and spit him out onto the dry ground. In other words, when he gets down to the latter part of that, what he says is, let me get the language right. He says, I will sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. In other words, as he was going in, he said, and if you'll do these things, if you'll forgive me for these things, I'll give you thanks. I'll pay that I vowed. I'll do what I told you that I'd do. In other words, I'll go. I will go. And then he says, salvation is of the Lord. Deliverance is of the Lord. And there we have that prophet that was delivered onto the dry ground out there. And he went. Even though he picked up his bad attitude again, he did go. He did what he said he would do. He made the vow and he promised and he went, just like he said that he would do. So it doesn't matter who you are. God's ready to listen. It don't matter where you are, obviously. Isn't that true? You can pray a pretty good prayer in the belly of a fish, it looks like, because that is an awesome prayer that he prayed right there. I don't know about you, but I prayed in a lot of places. Prayed at a lot of times, different times in the day and night, and in a lot of places. Some places that, places that I shouldn't have been in, places that I was in or whatever, but I've been able to pray in those places, and you have too. Everybody has their favorite place or have some favorite places that they go to. And if I have time, I like to go to those places because it gets my attitude and gets everything right with me and gets my mind thinking towards those things. I like to be in the house here. I spend a lot of time in this room. Jason knows. He's been up here and lived up here at the church with me. And I spend a lot of time in this room. This is my favorite room to pray in. And I come in here and I walk in this room and I pray in this room and I pass by chairs and I talk about the people that sit in those chairs because y'all are very much creatures of habit. And I talk about you and talk about the things that are important to you and to us and walk through this building. It's one of my favorite places. I enjoy walking while I pray in that. That leads me to the other one. It's not important what position you pray in. Obviously, he was either dog paddling or he was whatever in there. It doesn't matter. As he started that prayer, he just prayed in whatever position he happened to be in. Again, there are positions that help us to get our mind in tune and to get our thoughts and things in tune with that. Some folks like to kneel. Some folks like to lay flat. Some like to walk. Some like to sit. Some won't pray with their glasses on, want to take their glasses off. There's things that get us in tune with what's going on. But I'll tell you what, in a pinch, you can pray with them on or off. It don't make no difference, just wherever you happen to be. And just get after it with all of that. So a lot of good stuff that we see in this prayer here. Some things are important in the prayer, some things are not. One of the important things in that prayer is relationship with God. And if you'll take a look at the first few verses in there, what it does and leads us to is it tells him that he knows that he's dying. He knows that it's about to be over. And he just wants God to know that he wants to be right with him. I just want things to be right with us. And if you'll deliver me, I'll go. If you will, I'll go. No more questions. No more my way. Let's do it your way. And he was done. And spent 3 days decaying in the belly of that fish. And then God gave him a second chance and put him on his feet and dusted him off and sent him on his way. And so how quickly he forgot some of the benefits of what he had been through with all of that. Yeah, but it's still back in there, isn't it? It's still back in there, even when we drift. It's still back in there, the sweetness and the times when the Lord opens his arms and welcomes us back to him. And so he's always there. He don't throw us away. He is, he's always going to be there for you. He will always be there. And he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He is your God, and he holds you in the palm of his hand. Even though at times, you put a hard shell like a pecan around you so you can't feel his hand. You hardened your heart, put a hard husk around it. Hard to feel him, but he's still there. And he still loves and he still cares. I'm done for the evening with that short reminder for us this evening about prayer. It's relationship. Keep your relationship strong.